You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Episode 187 of Below the Belt. No quirky catch rate there, really, I don't think, for 187. I can't remember a fight being at 187. But back again, joined by my good friend, John McDonald. How are you, sir?
Hi, Carl. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, man, good. It was nice to have a couple of domestic cards at the weekend. Well, kind of. They're kind of domestic. One being over here and then one being in Vegas on UK time, which they stuck Johnny Fisher on the card to sell a few tickets because, save it right, Conor Benn isn't selling any tickets out there. So, yeah, a pretty good weekend all in all. But today, John Ryder announced his retirement. Did you see that?
I did. I seen that just before we started recording. Good career, a guy who looked as if he was finished many a time, managed to come back and reinvent himself at 168. Really nice guy. Can't fault him. That iconic image of him standing between rounds with a bust nose, blood dripping from it in Mexico against Canelo, you know, every bit of success he earned. Good guy.
Yeah, I think he can be really... He may not have won loads of titles. You know, he pushed Billy Joe Saunders really close for the British title. A lot of people thought he won that. Obviously boxed Canelo for the undisputed super middleweight title. Didn't quite get it over the line there. Won some intercontinentals and some other bits and bobs. But didn't really win many major titles, if any. But yeah, good guy. Some good fights, some good nights. Arguably should have beat Callum Smith for the WBA super middleweight title. Yeah, he can be very, you know, proud of his career. But I saw he'd retired, John, and I know you don't mind a wee quit. Does that count as a quit?
Yeah, like, I think retiring is the ultimate quit. It's the quit where we give them their flowers.
It's the one quit that they're not judged for, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
we absolutely allow the big quit. It's the little quits that people have problems with.
Yeah, one big the big quit, I think is the right way to word it. You wouldn't say someone retiring is, you know, they've shat the bed. Somebody you would say has shat the bed is Tyson Fury, because, you know, this pretend cut that he's got, he's managed to pull out a fight with Oleksandr Usyk. He was on Instagram earlier today showing off his cut. I'm being silly, obviously, but yeah, he was on Instagram earlier on showing off his cut. His fight with Oleksandr Usyk pushed back, I think, to the 10th of May, still in Saudi. Was it actually a little bit worried? I didn't watch this interview, but was it a little concerning to you that Tyson Fury was sat with Turkey out in Saudi, His Excellency, as everyone likes to call him? He was kind of sat with him, and they're like, you know, seems like they're very chummy. I don't know, that's a little concerning for me, as the guy that's, you know, kind of putting on these boxing matches, that Tyson Fury seems to be so chummy with him. Makes you worry about the judging in the fight, doesn't it?
See, I actually wasn't concerned. I think I got more vibes of a hostage proof of life video than I did best pals. Like, I think he got called into the gaffer's office for a bollocking and told if this fight doesn't come off, you're going to owe us X amount of money, and now we're going to sit down and you're going to tell people that this fight is going ahead and it's all right. That was the vibe I got from it. It felt like getting hauled into the headmaster's office for a dressing down.
That sounds good to me. I didn't watch it, so it sounds like you've seen more of it than I have. The less I can see of Tyson Fury speaking, the better. Really, I'm just about watching box through gritted teeth, but watching him speak, I try to avoid that with as much as I possibly can. So yeah, that makes sense actually. That, you know, Big Turk has kind of got him in the room and said, right, get on this video, show people the cut. You're doing this fucking fight, and I can definitely see that this guy's putting a lot of money. And I think a lot of people think, you know, people like him, that because they've got money that they're stupid, or because they're not boxing people, air quotes, that he's stupid. He's a money mark, if you like to use the wrestling term. But he's probably not that, you know. And so they want to get their money back on this, or as much money as they can off of it, or get kind of their coin's worth. And they want an undisputed heavyweight title fight to take place out in the Kingdom of Saudi. So, yeah. Let's hope you're right. Let's hope you're right, and we get this fight on May the 10th. And did you also see, John, 1st of June, it's going to be 3 weeks later, is going to be the big undisputed fight, along with the Matchroom Queensbury 5 versus 5, Bivol versus Beterbiev for the undisputed light heavyweight title. And then on the undercard will be the Queensbury versus Matchroom five fights of Queensbury versus Matchroom. Did you see that announcement?
I did. It's exciting. Like, that is a fight that seemed very far away until all this Saudi money came washing into the sport. I don't think we would have got it otherwise. Like, Bob Arum and Eddie Hearn weren't really looking to do much on that front. And now we've got it. It's a fantastic fight. Whatever five low-value prospects, both Matchroom and Queensbury put together, will be interesting enough. So yeah, like, I'm happy with it.
Yeah. You don't think a Callum Smith Anthony Yard lands on it?
No, I don't think we get anything major. I would be very surprised if we get anything remotely decent, because that would be helping Frank rebuild Yard at this point, because I haven't been impressed by Callum Smith. Like, I think he's probably the most overrated British fighter of the last 10 years or so.
I can go with that. I can go with that.
And I think that Eddie would just be helping Frank rebuild Yard's reputation, unless the Saudis want the winner there. But they've already expressed interest in a potential Bivol against Opetaia fight, so I think they'll be directing the winner up rather than facing Anthony Yard, Callum Smith winner type scenarios, how I kind of see it. But I've been wrong on big calls like this before, and with all the money that's going about, anything's possible. But I think it's probably going to be some quite low value stuff on the undercard, is my guess. Are you optimistic for better?
I would hope so, just because the cards have been pretty good so far out in Saudi in this recent kind, they have been pretty decent. So I'm hopeful that, although the Usyk Fury undercard wasn't amazing, but it was okay. And so I'm hopeful that they'll do something to juice it up a bit. I was hopeful it'd be Yard Callum Smith, and then maybe some prospects underneath that. What about Hamza Shiraz against Felix Cash, something like that?
Well, Hamza Shiraz has got to get past Liam Williams this weekend, first of all. But, like, I would be very happy with that. It's all gone a bit quiet on the Felix Cash front. Recently announced that he's now training with Adam Booth. So it'll be interesting to see how he's progressing. I'd love a fight like that. But again, I think both Matchroom and Queensbury have got vague world aspirations for both Cash and Shiraz. Like, I think it's going to be more the type of guys that they're either looking to cash out, or guys who they're not sure about and want to have a wee look at.
Yeah, that does make sense. You don't really want to put a money fighter in there on an undercard that they could lose, and that's kind of that. or their stock has dropped dramatically at the very least. So yeah, I think you are probably right. Talking of Felix Cash, I didn't realise he'd gone to Adam Booth, but I'm not surprised. He was with Tony Sims before, wasn't he? And that gym's taken a bit of a battering since the whole Conor Benn thing, reputational wise at least. Did you see the footage of Ben Whitaker and Felix Cash sparring?
No, I haven't seen that. Oh, what happened?
Ben Whitaker's moving him around. He's moving him around. He's lighting him up, to be honest. Yes, it's a spa. Spars don't mean anything. I don't put a lot of stock into gym stories or into sparring, but he's obviously naturally bigger as well, but he's moving him around and he is lighting him up with shots. He's taking the piss out of him, to be honest. But Ben Whitaker's an elite amateur. He's been very active as a pro, and Felix Cash hasn't boxed for, it feels like, forever now, or he hasn't boxed much. So I don't put too much in it. Like I said, it's just sparring, but he's lighting him up, John.
That's interesting. So how bad is it? Is it Paul Spadafora beating up Floyd Mayweather bad?
Floyd Mayweather was never beaten up. Okay, let's get that out of the way. Yes.
You know the spar I mean.
Yes. Yeah, it is. He is it's edited in a way that makes Whitaker look very good. You don't really see Felix Cash ever any success at all. It's just clips. But he's getting lit up. Whitaker's looking very good and Felix Cash is not. He's kind of looking like the guys that Whitaker's fighting at the minute. maybe it was one of them, because you can never tell under the head guard, can you?
No.
Because we're about to move on to the Joshua Boazzi card. Ben Whitaker, to an extent, got all the headlines again. You like him, don't you? You still feel the same?
Absolutely. I think he's doing his job correctly. I understand the criticism. It does look like bullying when he's doing it to guys so beneath his level, but it's working. The amount of times I've seen the highlights of him clowning poor Khalid Gradia about doing the rounds on social media from people who don't follow boxing is an indication that he's doing it well. He is generating hype. He's generating interest. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a really good fighter. He's an interesting prospect. He's an interesting character. And he gets people talking, and that's what we need. We don't have a lot of genuine stadium headliners in Britain at the minute. It's hard to see who many of the next generation are. I bet you Ben Whitaker will be selling out stadiums in the Midlands in no time at all. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think, you made a good point. You know, we don't have many people now that can fill up stadiums. I'd argue we don't have many people that can fill up big arenas, that can fill up the O2. Or Manchester Arena, whatever it's called now. I think actually what Boxer are doing, because he did annoy me before, because I felt like a lot of people did that, mate, you're taking the piss out of people well below your level, which is still true. But actually how I view it is that Boxer are doing a fantastic job building him up. They are building him up like a shit-eating heel that everyone's going to hate, or a lot of people are going to hate, and they are going to be dying for the honest pro to come along and beat him. And that's going to sell tickets, that's going to put bums on seats, and it may even sell some pay-per-views one day. So I think they're doing a great job, Boxer, building him up. I've been quite critical of, you know, how they run things, but I think with him, I think they're doing it right. They're building him up to be a shit-eating heel. He's doing the whole Prince Nassim bit, Prince Nassim cosplay bit that he's got going on. But Prince Nassim's prime was 30 years ago, nearly. So fucking let him do it. No one, there's a lot of the younger guys who don't even know who Prince Nassim is. So, you know, let him have his fun. I think the referee was right to stop him spinning around and showing his back and stopping him doing things that are illegal. I think the ref's right to do that, because those are the rules and the ref's there to enforce them. But I don't mind it at all, John.
It's funny, though. The Prince Nassim Hamed comparisons are being made a lot, and I think it's partly because of the Adidas ring gear and everything else. Mm-hmm. but he's pretty much doing the same things that Boots Ennis is doing and has done. A lot of the moves look very Boots Ennis rather than Prince Nazim Hamed to me. And the funny thing is, Boots does not get the same degree of hate. Like, in the US, they love somebody who's flashy and showy. It doesn't matter in which sport, if it's basketball, American football, boxing. Whereas here, we hate a show-off. We want a meat and potatoes agricultural plodder opposed to a big flashy guy who's shit hot and knows it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, actually. We're kind of all about manners, aren't we, over here? Being polite, being good sports people. I actually think there's probably a racial element there as well. A lot of people don't like me hearing that. You know, people loved it when Billy Joe Saunders, you know, was when David Lemieux missed a shot and he's posing in the crowd. And, you know, I think there's perhaps a bit of that as well. We, you know, people might not like that, but tough shit. So, yeah, I like him. I'm warming to him. And like I said last time out, if he does it to some French European champion, people will fucking love it. Like, if he, and I think he's good enough. I'm actually starting to believe he's good enough to do it at a higher level. I think we're getting there now where it's perhaps time to get to a higher level. I think perhaps it's good enough for him to, you know, now all the domestic titles, you know, Joshua Buatsi's just won at the weekend and he's...
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Probably going to vacate them all. It's probably, he can probably start to go for that level. Is that what you'd like to see for him?
I think they need to start stepping him up in some way, because whilst I agree they're giving him the platform with, on Sky Sports to become this big monster heel, the guys he's fighting really aren't moving the needle. There's a fantastic form of cynical matchmaking that Matchroom perfected with Conor Benn during the sort of pandemic era, where they built him into this monster with really cynical matchmaking by finding guys who had previously been durable who were right at the end of their career. Like, there are still people like that floating about. There's Najib Mohammadi, who is now 38, but most of his losses have come in very good company against Kovalev, Vojdic. It's people like that, you know, lost to Cleverly way back in the day. He's still going. He's 38. He's got a low punch output. He's not really a puncher. It's the sort of fight where he could look very good in beating up Mohammadi. And he is the French former European champion you were speaking of. You know, he could really look the part against a slowing, aging guy who isn't particularly dangerous. If they don't want to go that route, there's someone like Ricky Summers, who had a competitive fight with Dan Aziz. There's lots of options out there, but it just needs to be progressive, whether it's domestic guys or people with a bit of a name and a reputation, that he can start looking like a monster. Like, Ben Shalom was trying to make a big deal out of the fact that he'd stopped Gradia quicker than people like Aziz had previously, but you're dealing with a glorified journeyman. Like, it needs to be of a higher caliber, but whilst he's still in eight rounders, they're going to struggle to attract the caliber of fighter needed to progress his reputation. They need to get him to 10 and 12 rounds as soon as possible.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do. I think you're right. Is it Shakan Peters, you know, British champion or former British champion? You know, Is it too soon for Lyndon Arthur? Is it Dan Aziz? You know, Shakan Peters is 34 now, you know, and he's known, he's boxed on Channel 5, he's been British champion. I think he might be coming off a loss, though. But perhaps people of that level, I think doing the domestic thing, people that can talk back, people that can maybe sell a few tickets, that might be the way to go. You know, I think Lerone Richards might be, you know, in and around light heavy as well. I think there's, you know, there might be even Jean Pascal. Do you get Jean Pascal over? you know, to someone that's known. Well, everybody knows who he is. Go on.
Why wasn't he fighting Boris Crichton this weekend?
Mm.
Like, Boris Crichton gave Lyndon Arthur a tough fight on Channel 5. He's been in an 8-rounder against Callum Simpson on Boxer before, so they know how to make that fight. And today it's announced that he's fighting Craig Spider Richards. Like, he would have been a perfectly suitable step-up domestic guy, had fought on Channel 5, had given Lyndon Arthur a tough fight. Lyndon Arthur had beaten Anthony Yard. Anthony Yard, who'd given Better Biev a tough fight. Like, there was a narrative that could have been spun there, rather than going, look, he stopped this guy quicker than Dan Aziz, who isn't a known puncher. Mm. Like, they're not very good at connecting fighters and spinning the larger narrative. Like, that's one thing that Eddie and Matchroom are very, very good at. They can really hype a fighter with the correct fights, and I think Boxer are missing a trick. It's the same with how they've been matching Fraser Clark up to this point.
I think what Matchroom do, which Boxer don't do, is when they matchmake, they're playing to their base. As the politicians would say. And what I mean by that is, they know, Matchroom, that the boxing fans are going to watch. They know that the hardcore, that know boxing, that know who all these guys are, that know who Lyndon Arthur is and Dex Spellman and all these people, they know who these people are. They know they're going to watch. Whereas what Boxer are doing is they're just getting cans in who people don't know. So you're not really playing to the base, because the base can see that that's a can. They don't, you know, they. It's not someone that even the hardcores know. It's just a can for them to knock over. And you're right, they've done it with Fraser Clark, and they seem to be doing the same with Ben Whitaker. They need to get some people that are known to the base, to the hardcores. And that might get the hardcores taking more interest, and then you go for the, you know, and then the casual is going to take care of itself because of the style.
Absolutely, I completely agree. And again, it's finding the intersection. I think that's what Matchroom did very well with Ben, because they were able to get him people like Vargas, who'd fought Khan. They were able to get Algieri, who'd fought Pacquiao. And they were able to get Chris Van Heerden, who'd fought Errol Spence. But they got all these guys right on the death rattle of their career. Like, all these people either retired after losing to Ben or fought once or twice more. But these people were finished and ready to go. And that is what they did. It was a name value that they could link to a big name for the casuals that the hardcores were familiar with. And at the time, to be dropped in spectacular fashion to try and artificially build a monster. And I think Boxer could learn from that in terms of generating the hype.
Yeah, I think they could learn a bit or two. There's a lot of kind of criticism against Boxer. There's not many proper boxing people there. And I think if they could start to play to the hardcores a little bit more in terms of the way they bring prospects up, I think that would really help. I think that would really help bring eyes to their product. And I actually think it would help with, you know, their fighters' development as well. But I think it goes without saying that Whitaker's ready, more than ready, to get above can level now. You know, let's get him in a place where he might have to take a dig or two. Not saying we want to see him lose or get stopped or whatever, but, you know, let's start to see him get pushed a little bit. Someone's going to come to win instead of coming to survive. I think that's important for him. But even though we're talking all about, you know, Ben Whitaker, John, it was headlined by Joshua Buatsi and Dan Aziz. Did I get that right? It was for the British Commonwealth European Light Heavyweight title. It was also a WBA eliminator. Joshua Buatsi won handily, didn't he, in the end?
He did. It was a competitive fight with a clear winner. All the rounds were competitive. Buatsi just was better in the majority of them. It was a fun fight. Judging by the reaction of some of the people who were there, I think it might have been a better fight to be at than to watch on TV. Like, Rob Tebbit of Boxing News was really enthralled. If you look at his feed, he thought it was an absolutely cracking fight, which I don't think it was on TV. I thought it was a very good fight. It was a fun fight. I enjoyed it, but it seemed to be a little bit more special in the arena. And that happens sometimes. There are some fights that just do not translate that well to TV as they do being there live. But it was good. I thought that Buati was okay. I wasn't as impressed with him as some people were, but he won handily. What did you think?
I thought he won at a canter. And I actually thought he took the middle rounds off and he let Dan Aziz back into the fight. I don't think Dan Aziz was close to his level, to be honest. What the Buatsi's left hand could not miss upstairs or downstairs. He could not miss with it. He was hitting him with left hooks to the body from round one. And then in the middle rounds, it was left hook, right uppercut. He couldn't miss with that combination time and again. And he just looked. He looked like he was the puncher. He looked the bigger man. He looked the technically better fighter. I think he had a few rounds off in the middle, which he's guilty of doing. I think he's shown, and I think he's probably felt this, that he's above domestic level. He's well above domestic level. The issue he had is he hasn't taken any fights at world level, and so he's kind of in this middle place where he's too good for domestic level, but the two very, very best guys at world level are going to fight each other. And he's shown really no interest, even though he's been offered to fight guys like Bivol. Even Jean-Pascal, he didn't fight. I thought he won. I thought he won handily. I thought the points was about right. 117, 109 twice and 116, 110. Yeah, I think 8-4, 9-3 with the knockdowns was about right. What did you think of the knockdowns? They were a bit odd, weren't they?
They were harsh, given that both men had almost lost their footing on the logos on the canvas previously, and given the way that he went down, I think it was very clear that both were slips. I think it was quite harsh to call them knockdowns personally. Like, there were punches involved, but it wasn't the punch that put him down. What did you think?
Yeah, I think I think he was right how you said it. He was landing punches, Buatsi, but the way Aziz went down showed us that it was a slip. He went down with very straight legs, and that was kind of there was no attempt to kind of, normally when someone goes down, they'll kind of crumple and go down, but the way he went, it was almost, you could see that he'd slipped. Even the one in the final round, you could see he slipped. Did you feel towards the end, in that last 30 seconds, when the body punches of Buatsi had clearly caught up with Aziz, and Aziz looked like he was blowing. Did you think that Buatsi took his foot off the gas and let his mate survive?
Absolutely. They have sparred countless rounds together. They get on very well. There's a lot of respect there. Buatsi wanted his mate to hear the final bell, and fair enough. Like, I've got no issue in that situation. My gripe with Buatsi is what it's always been, is the low punch output, the rounds taken off in the middle. I used to think that he had a phenomenally high ceiling when he burst on the scene as a prospect, but he just lacks that second phase, that third gear to go through to get rid of guys who don't just fall over when he lands his one nice clean shot in a combination. He frustrates me no end. It's starting to give me James DeGale vibes. He's not leaning on the ropes in the same way, but he's taking his breaks. And we're still talking about Joshua Buatsi's potential. He's 30 years of age.
Yeah.
You know, when was the last time Joshua Buatsi looked devastating? Do we have to go back to the Conroy fight, who's an English title level guy, 5 years ago? Like, he hasn't set the pulse racing since. Like, I believe he can be competitive with top guys, but I just don't see this version, this guy who seems so laid back, and he doesn't have the dog in him. Where's the killer instinct? Am I being harsh?
No, I don't think you're being harsh at all. And it's almost like he's in a comfort zone, and he's, you know, like I was just talking about the matchmaking a minute ago, it's like he doesn't want to come out of the comfort zone. He's happy to just box in second gear and be loads better than everybody else. He's happy to play at Sunday League instead of taking that move to League One, Do you know what I mean? He's happy to be the best kid on the pitch and not really step up to that level. He'd boxed so much with Dan Aziz. He knew he was going to beat Dan Aziz. He knew it. He sparred him a million times. He knew he was going to win handily. He knew he'd win a few belts. And it was built up to be a competitive fight. But I don't think it was... You know, our friend Sean Brown did the picks for Boxing News. There was, I think it was about 40 to 10 in the end. And I don't know who the 10 were. It just seems like he's just too comfortable. And I don't think he's going to get a fight with Beterbiev or Bivol because he's just left it too long now. And I think he'll have to wait for the next phase to come along. But by then, he might be too old and it might be some Eastern European filth bag that he has to fight for a world title, and he ends up getting smashed in because he's let it go for too long. You know what? But what do you think he does next? What do you think happens with him next?
I think he probably bides his time because there will be discussions with Frank Warren regarding an Anthony Yard fight. If Frank thinks that the winner of Beterbiev and Bivol is off to cruiserweight, those discussions will be very short and that fight won't be happening, and both men will just wait to pick up vacant titles. Because of Frank's relationship with Turki Al-Sheikh, he will know what the long-term game plan is, because as I've said previously on here, I believe that the belts and things that would motivate fighters are going to become second behind what the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia see as the route forward for a boxer's career. So if the Saudis want the winner taking on Al-Pitayat, that's what's going to happen. The belts will be vacant. If they want to keep the winner there for a while to fight Buatsi, to fight Yard again, or potentially for the first time, depending on who's victorious, then that's what's going to happen. So I think it's probably going to be either wait for vacant title or potentially fight Anthony Yard. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he could wait. I could see him perhaps boxing in an eliminator. He's just had the WBA final eliminator. I could see him going for an interim title or a regular belt. He's with the WBA, so he might... I know they're supposed to be kind of amalgamating their titles now, but I could see him doing something soft like a regular title. Or he's only got to wait until June, and then the belts might be vacant by June. And he could pick up a belt then. So actually, with that in mind, and I asked Paul and Luke this last time on, who would you fancy Beterbiev or Bivol? Who do you think is going to win that?
It's a very difficult call for me. I flip-flop. I can see how both guys can win this. Today, I'm leaning Beterbiev. I think Bivol's lack of punch power currently is going to be an issue, and Beterbiev will get success. But ask me tomorrow, and I can think that it's Bivol's footwork is going to keep Beterbiev at range most of the night. So I flip-flop. Do you have a strong lean one way or the other?
Yeah, last time out, I said Beterbiev. I haven't changed my mind. I just think he's had the tougher fights, and but he always gets them out of there. He's just so unrelenting, and he hits so hard, and I don't think Bivol has the power to keep him off. I don't think he's a puncher, and I think someone like an Anthony Yard is a much bigger puncher, and so I just think that he'll walk through Bivol's shots, and I think he'll just get him out of there. It'll be late. It might even be round 12. And he might even be losing the fight on points. But I just think he'll just break him. I think he'll just break him down and get him out of there in the end. Because that's what Artur Beterbiev does. He gets in the ring. He walks you down. He might lose some rounds. He might eat some shots. But he will break you because he's stronger than you. He hits harder than you. And he's fitter than you. And I don't see it to be any different this way. And I like Bivol, but I just think this is what he does. He's 39, but he lives like a saint. You know, he lives like a saint. And I just think, sorry.
But Cal, what does Bivol do?
he lives like a saint as well. Everybody. Yeah, he does.
He lives like a saint.
Yeah,
he mesmerizes people with his footwork. He controls distance. He makes people fall short.
He makes
that is what he does.
He does, but he makes. He's not done it at the level that Beterbiev does. Beterbiev's record of fighters is much better than Bivol's. His record's loads better. Loads better.
Oh, his record is better. I wouldn't personally. I don't think it's loads better. I think neither of them have got the deepest resume in the world. Like Beterbiev has got the best win in Vojdic, which I think is a tremendous win. I thought Vojdic was actually going to be the one to beat Beterbiev. I thought he was that mix of boxer-puncher who was going to be able to keep him at bay, keep him honest, and break him down, and I was completely wide off the mark. But the rest of Beterbiev's resume isn't all that deep.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. Well, hopefully, we will get to see on June the 1st. But yeah, I think Beterbiev, but yeah, Bivol was a fantastic fighter. And do you know what? I forgot for a second that his performances against Canelo, it's easy to forget he beat Canelo and beat him so comfortably as well. You forget all about it because it was actually really one-sided, wasn't it? Go on.
The reason I don't have the Canelo win as the best win out of the pair is because he's not really a light heavyweight.
Yeah. And he's closer to being a middleweight, really. And it was so one-sided. And actually, what I also forgot was his performance against Gilberto Ramirez. That was a fantastic performance. He was brilliant that night.
Yep.
And that he was undefeated, Ramirez, at the time. So, I can see it. I can see it both ways. But maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit biased. I love Beterbiev.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah. He's a wrecking machine and it makes for great telly. Like he's the easier fighter to get behind, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it may be a little bit of heart overhead. It may be a little bit, yeah, I guess he's just a little bit more exciting, isn't he? But we'll see. We shall see. You've got to love the BoxRec rankings. They've got Gilberto Ramirez as the number one cruiserweight in the world. Got to love it. It's mental, isn't it?
Super. Don't you just love the algorithms?
The algorithm's great. It makes absolutely no sense at all. The only thing they get right is when they list Floyd Mayweather as the greatest fighter of all time. That's like, that's the only thing I can get along with that. Like, yes, that's the one thing they get right on their rankings. Number two on the BoxRec cruiserweight rankings is Chris Billum Smith, and even though they didn't announce a date and a venue, unless I missed it, apologies if I missed it, but I was listening out for a date and a venue because I've always been taught unless they announce a date and a venue, it ain't fucking happening yet. But it sounds like Chris Billum Smith is going to fight Richard Riakpor in a rematch somewhere, I imagine in England. Good fight, good rematch.
It's a competitive fight, but I really didn't enjoy their first fight. It was very ugly. It was at the stage of his career where Richard Riakpor in that fight looked a bit like Lawrence Okolie light. It was a lot of hugging and it wasn't an entertaining spectacle. I believe both men have improved. I think that Riakpor is a much better fighter now than he was then, so I'm not writing it off as a bad fight. It's a good competitive fight. It just might not necessarily be an exciting one. But Chris Billum-Smith managed to drag Okolie into a fight that was vaguely watchable, so you never know. What do you think?
Vaguely watchable. I remember thinking watching that Billum-Smith Okolie fight, I never want to see either one of these people in a boxing ring ever again. I was absolutely livid with Lawrence Okolie. Absolutely livid. But Billum-Smith didn't some of the language I used about him, and he's apparently lovely, apparently a really nice guy. But when people really like someone, I have to hate on them. It's just part of who I am. It's part of my DNA. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it just because it's interesting. They're 33 and 34 respectively, so it's shit or get off the pot really for both of them, isn't it? It's a shame that Riakpor couldn't pick up a world title of his own to bring to that fight. Would have made it a much bigger fight. And Riakpor won the first time, a split decision. I had it in my head it was a stoppage. It was not. It was a split decision. We go again. You fancy Riakpor second time around again to repeat or revenge?
I lean towards Reactor, but Chris Billingsmith showed a great deal of heart and just will to win against the cuddling machine that is Lawrence Okolie. So I wouldn't be surprised if he finds a way again. There wasn't much between them the first time. I'm not convinced there's a great deal between them second time round. So we'll see. Like, I think that Reactor will start as a slight favourite, but it's a good, interesting, competitive fight. I'm just not sure it'll be a fun watch.
I fancy Billingsmith, you know. I think Billingsmith might... I think he just... He finds a way. He does find a way. And I think Shane McGuigan's a fantastic trainer. I think he's head and shoulders above every other trainer in the country, to be honest, as a tactician. Like, in putting a plan together, I think he's excellent. So I do fancy Billingsmith. I think the training setup might be the difference here. But I like Reactor. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I'm looking forward to it. They just need to announce a date and a venue. Otherwise, I don't believe it. The other fight, which they did announce a venue and a date in March, was Fabio Wardley against my mate Fraser Clark. They finally got Fraser Clark in with someone with a pulse, John.
Yeah, who knew? Like, I didn't think that they were going to show any interest in that fight, but they've made it, and it's all good for British boxing that prospects coming through are fighting each other. Fabio Wardley seems to be getting a run of them after the David Adelaide fight over in Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, like, it's interesting. I worry about the grounding that Fraser Clark has had for this fight, because Bogdan Dinu, Marius Back and David Allen isn't the best preparation for Fabio Wardley, but it's good. I like it. I'm here for it. Do you think it's good?
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like, you know, they're not really involved in the stuff that's going on, you know, in Saudi, are they, boxer, as yet? You never know. You know, we've just seen fucking, you know, Eddie Hearn and Frank Warren are going out for dinners together. So anything's possible. Boxer might be able to wangle their way in there. Why not? Why not, right? Yeah, I think they've seen what's going on in Saudi. They thought, we could get left behind here. We need to pick things up and let's start making the fights now. So, you know, they've not waited for Okolie. Says a lot about Okolie that, you know, he had a rematch clause with Billingsmith and has not taken it. And Billingsmith's about to box for a second time since their fight. So I think that's him kind of out of the cruiserweight equation now. And then also, yeah, Wardley and Fraser Clark. You know, people, you know, he made a bit of a tit of himself, Fraser, to be honest, with that, you know, wanting the purse bid and then pulling out of it. Well, not so much him, but his management, but they represent him. So, yeah, so now they've got to go now. Who would you fancy? Again, I'm going to put you on the spot. Fabio Wardley and Fraser Clark. Who would you pick?
Fabio Wardley. Like, I like Clark. I think he is a good fighter. He spent a long time on the GB setup, but Wardley has had the better professional grounding for a fight like this. He's managed the occasion of a big domestic fight, although it didn't take place in Britain, against David Adderley. I just think that all the advantages at the minute lie with him. It's not necessarily that he's the better fighter overall, but I think at this stage in his career, it's at the right time for him. And because of the way they've matched Fraser Clark, too soon for Clark. How do you see it?
I agree, 100%. He has not had the fights to prepare him for someone with the seasoning that Fabio Wardley has. Fabio Wardley punches ridiculously hard. He's getting people out of there. I never got why people thought the David Adelaide fight would be close, to be honest. He's not had the fights at all to prepare him for Wardley. And Wardley's been, you know, he's done well. He's been matched well. Some of the people who've boxed, you could argue, were on the wane. But he left no doubt. He left no doubt, whether it's Nathan Gorman. You know, he's left no doubt David Adelaide. He's got them out of there. And I think he'll get Fraser Clark out of there, to be honest. And I can put that all behind me, John. I can put it all behind me. I win. Then he can retire. And I win.
He can go for the big quit and You can be happy.
I can be happy. I can rest. I can rest. I was reminded of that yesterday when I was at a social event about my faux pas with mixing up Fraser Clark and Joe Joyce to Fraser Clark's face. Yeah, that's my night's sleep ruined for tonight. One thing, I didn't watch it because I didn't have the facilities to watch two fights at once. So I chose to watch Joshua Buatsi against Dan Aziz. On at exactly the same time, on DAZN, was Conor Benn's decision win over Peter Dobson out in Vegas at 3:30 in the afternoon. When you heard that the fight was announced, but you're much more knowledgeable than I am, did you think that Peter Dobson was a white Irishman and not an African American when that fight was announced?
No, but only because this is Matchroom's third attempt at matching one of their prospects with Peter Dobson.
Right. So you was aware of him, right?
Yeah, he'd previously been announced to fight Kevin Agiarco. He was meant to be fighting McCormack and then eventually fought Conor Benn. And during the lockdown, I think it was, Craig Scott liked to go and interview random fighters from across the world, so he did a feature on Peter Dobson for Boxing Social. So that is the only reason I knew he was not a white Irishman.
I absolutely believed he was a white Irishman until the week of the fight. Until they did the press conference. I had it in my head he was a white Irishman and they were just having a kind of a domestic-ish dust-up in Vegas. And then it was the week of, I was like, oh, he's an African-American from New York. And he can talk a bit. I was like, okay, cool. And he looked naturally bigger than Conor Benn. And I thought, I didn't think it'd be interesting. And I thought Conor Benn would get him out of there. But interestingly, John, he did not get him out of there.
He did not. And there was a lot of people really going heavy on the betting for early stoppages and things. But Peter Dobson was an okay amateur. He was a New York Golden Gloves guy. He's sparred the likes of Boots in the past. He's not a mug. He's got enough about himself. He's not the most responsible defensively. He keeps that left hand low. He's open to right hands. He's got a low punch output. I never thought that Benn was going to win, but I wasn't surprised when Benn failed to get him out of there. Have you seen any of it at all?
Yeah, I did. I watched the first few rounds. Basically, both the fights started at the same time. So actually, I think I got to watch round one before the Buatsi fight started. And then after that, I was kind of flicking back and forth. But Buatsi Aziz was interesting to me. So I didn't end up flicking back. But yeah, he was landing big shots and Dobson looked durable. He looked like a good journeyman pro, really. But it was at 150, the fight, wasn't it? He weighed 150. And yeah. Conor Benn, I saw something interesting online that he weighed 170 the following morning. He was a light heavy, so he would have been a light heavyweight by the time he gets in the ring. It's really surprising, actually, isn't it, that Conor Benn, he doesn't look tall, and with his frame, he doesn't look like he'd be a light heavyweight. But by the time he got in the ring Saturday night, he would have been, or Saturday afternoon, he would have been a light heavy in the ring. But he just, perhaps Dobson was just, you know, had a solid chin on him. What do you think?
Dobson did some clever things. He managed to be leaning back when taking most of these punches. He did the sort of Kevin Kingpin Johnson journeyman moves of leaning back, taking the sting out of the punches. He was never really coming forward to get caught flush. He was picking his spots. And as I've mentioned earlier on, like, Conor Benn's tremendous power was somewhat manufactured. Because there's a lot made of the fact that he stopped Algeria early and Algeria had previously been very durable. But Algeria was also 36 when they fought and he'd been skittled by Manny Pacquiao six times. He'd been down twice against Provodnikov. Mm-hmm. He'd been down three times against Spence. You know, he'd taken a lot of hard fights.
Yep.
He never had a win of note at 147. He was 36. He'd taken a lot of punches from very big punchers. The timing was right. And as I said, most of these guys that he fought during that massive knockout phase never fought again. The people he went the distance with, like Formella, for example, is still fighting, still going on. Anybody with a bit more ambition who wasn't quite finished, he wasn't getting out of there. So it was a little bit of smoke and mirrors to begin with. I've never really bought this Ben is a massive puncher, but his punches certainly haven't had any effect on Orozco or Dobson, to be perfectly honest. And he was getting clipped by Dobson. Do you think that his power was previously overrated, or that he just suddenly isn't hitting quite as hard as he used to?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think he was fighting washed up Americans. And for the reasons you said earlier on, they were people that were known to the hardcores and to people that perhaps follow boxing a little bit, but not, you know, aren't the hardcore. So Algeria, like you said, would have fought Manny Pacquiao, Vargas, who'd fought Amir Khan, all those guys that Fordella had boxed, Sean Porter, hadn't he? So people that know boxing, even if they're perhaps not hardcores, would know who these people are. But they were at the tail, not so much Formanella, but at the end, you know, people like Algieri and Vargas were at the end of their career. And they've had to travel over. You cannot underestimate having to do the travelling over, jet lag and all that sort of thing, and just not being in your home country and your home, all that sort of thing. It's different. It definitely has an impact on results of fights, the location. You always have to rate an away win. I think it was because of that, and then the obvious as well, you know, he did fail two drug tests for, you know, a substance that would make your testosterone increase. That happened. How it got in his system, only it's up to him and his God that knows that. Only him and his God know that. So who knows? But yeah, I think it was overrated. He's now boxing at a higher weight. He was at 150 the other day. I guess because he was at 150, you think he's probably going to taper back to 147. But he's also talking about boxing Eubank. Eddie Hearn was quite damning about Eubank, about fighting him. And if he's going to box Eubank, I don't think that's any good for him, because he's going to be at 160. He's going to be against an even bigger man. 147, I think, where he needs to be. I think that's where he'll carry his power the best. But I'm not sure what fights are out there for him, John.
Well, he's been very ambitious. He put out a tweet on Sunday morning, and he was after Devin Haney, Eubank Jr., Errol Spence, Kell Brook, or Barrios.
I saw the Barrios one. Barrios is the interim WBC champion, is that right?
Yeah.
So he wants Barrios because it's... And Barrios, this is Barrios that Tank fought.
Yeah.
So he doesn't look at himself as kind of rebuilding, which is, although the fights he's having suggest he is rebuilding. And the weights, I think the weights are important as well, because he's not fighting at championship rounds, and he's not, I don't know if he's fighting 12 rounds, but he's not fighting at championship weight, sorry. So I think his matchmaking screams rebuild, but his talking and his promoters talking doesn't say that, to be honest with you. But that's what promoters do, right? I think it's more likely Kell Brook boxes Eubank, just because of the promotional. I think it's easier. I think they'd box on Sky. Barrios, he's with PBC. PBC don't really work with outside promoters. I think he probably fights another one, someone kind of unheralded again, John, but maybe back bang on 147 and gets himself a ranking with the WBC, because they're not bothered about, you know, letting people that have failed a test box and get back into their rankings, clean sport boxing program and all that sort of stuff. I'm not sure. What do you think? Do you think the Eubank fight happens?
No, I don't think the Eubank fight happens. I think one of them fights Kell Brook, and it's Kell Brook's a mercenary. He doesn't care. he'll bury the hatchet with Eddie if the most money is there. And I can see that fight because 150, does that not sound about roughly where Kell Brook would like a fight?
Yeah.
Never looked that good at 154 himself.
Yep.
Found 147 very difficult to make. 150 seems very Kell Brook weight, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's possible. And you'd fancy Ben, wouldn't you, just because he's fresher. He's just loads fresher. This isn't the shell of Amir Khan standing in front of him. This is a fresh guy that's not had any tough fights, to be honest, other than the kid from Luxembourg gave him a toughish fight. But other than that, he's kind of had it all his own way. What was interesting about that was all the people I spoke to that follow boxing casually said, oh, did you watch the boxing at the weekend? And I said, oh yeah, Buatsi looked pretty good. And they said, no, not Buatsi, Conor Benn. And despite the boxing being, despite, you know, Buatsi being on Sky Sports and, you know, Conor Benn being on DAZN, it's not, maybe not his popularity, but people are still following Conor Benn, aren't they?
Yeah, he's a massive name. And I would hazard a guess that he's probably a bigger name than Chris Eubank Jr. at the minute. So I think that would probably sway Brooke if the money is there. It will all depend on where they could host a potential Conor Benn pay-per-view, because the board aren't going to back down. He's not going to fight in Britain just now. So it would be if there is Saudi money there for it. If not, he's going to need to try and get a big name American. They're making all the right noises about a big fight. I wonder if Eddie's just looking to cash him out.
Did you see the stuff with Tank on Twitter?
The worst trash talk I have seen in such a long time. Like, just make it stop. It was terrible.
Yeah, it was. It was a little bit strange. It was a little bit strange, really. He's not good at it. It's not natural to him. It's not natural to him, really. Conor Benn. There is a little bit of kind of. He's like got this faux kind of Cockney thing about him, hasn't he? And then he's trying to do the trash talking as well, and it's just a bit, I don't know, I just find it all a bit cringe, a bit embarrassing, to be honest. I don't know. But how would you Tank would walk through him, wouldn't he, John?
I think all the names, I actually think Brooke would beat him if he turns up in anything that resembles shape. And assuming that he hasn't put his body through too much hell since the Amir Khan fight, I think even though it's not a shell of Amir Khan, it's a not particularly good fighter in Conor Benn he's facing. Like, for example, would you comfortably pick Conor Benn to beat all of Samuel Antwi, Conor Walker, and Esso Ekerman, for example, and Harry Scarfe? Do you think he wins 4 out of 4 of those fights against sort of British/English level guys?
No, I think there's a reason why he's avoided that. He's avoided the tough domestic fights. You know, the guys that are too good for domestic level tend to prove they're too good for domestic level, i.e. we're talking about Buatsi earlier on. Buatsi just walked through domestic level and just beat them all, won all the belts, and said, all right, fuck off, I'm going to go and do something else now. Although he's kind of skirted in the middle of it. Conor Benn, or his matchmakers at least, is that he's not actually boxed anybody that was ranked in the top 10 in Britain. He's boxed everybody from abroad. He's not really wanted to box at that level. So no, I wouldn't pick him. Would you?
No, I wouldn't pick him in all of those fights. I'd be convinced that he loses at least one. And when you throw in people like Michael McKinson, these are good, solid pros between English and British title level. I would be surprised if he legitimately beat all of them. He may get a decision against all of them, but if he legitimately won the fight would be another matter. I think that if Kellbrook is motivated and focused, even he would be beating Conor Benn. Like, Peter Dobson was landing clean and he wasn't throwing very often. If Kellbrook was landing those punches, Conor Benn would be going to sleep.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I imagine he's been vigorously drug tested as well. So I'd agree. I think he might land on Kellbrook first, just because, like you said, you don't know how he's been living since being retired. And that was a couple of years ago now, wasn't it? The Khan fight. So you just don't know, you know, a couple of years out the ring, not training. You don't, he looks all right, you know, in shape. He looks in shape. So you don't, he might be in the gym doing bits. But yeah, he might know enough. But yeah, you're right. You're right. Conor Benn's just, outside of those kind of washed up Americans, is not, he's not really had the fights to say, yeah, he'd beat this guy, yeah, he'd beat that guy. And I think his performances since coming back from his shadow ban, if you like, kind of shows where he's kind of at. So yeah, I suppose we'll see. We'll see what's going on for him next. But it was interesting to me that people kept talking to me about the Conor Benn fight and not the Joshua Boratzi fight. But I suppose he is a big name. You are right. And you mentioned earlier Hamza Shiraz and Liam Williams this weekend. Liam Williams had a great run. He was a kind of a 154 guy, but that was boxing at middleweight and had a really good one. I think he might have won the British title outright, or got close to it. Did he win it outright, John? Did he?
I can't remember off the top of my head if he won it outright.
I think he might have done. I'm going to tell people he did. But then he gets the Eubank fight. People think, okay, this is interesting. He's knocking people out, you know, early at middleweight, at domestic level. And people are like, okay, where are we? We're, you know, this is going to be interesting. And he gets dropped off jabs by Eubank and gets outboxed quite handily. And has never really looked the same since. And he's going in with Hamza Shiraz this weekend, who's a, you know, a prospect on the way up, WBC silver belt. How do you think that goes this weekend?
I'm really not sure, because I used to be very high on Liam Williams when he was at light middleweight, when he first fought Liam Smith with the WBO interim light middleweight title on the line. He was doing really, really well in that fight until the eye injury meant that he couldn't continue because of the two cuts on the right eye, and Smith got the win. He was then really disinterested for the rematch. I think it was a split or a majority to Smith, although Smith won it quite handily. He then had the Demetrius Andrade fight. He was down early in that one, like he was against Eubank. The really interesting thing for me here is he's back training with Gary Lockett, who together they had all that success at light middleweight. They were winning the first Liam Smith fight. I think they understand one another. They've got a really good relationship. I'm struggling to get over how highly I once rated Liam Williams. I think it might be too soon for Shiraz. You know, this is a guy who struggled with Bradley Skeet. So, I don't know. And Shiraz is that incredibly tall, lanky frame. All I can think of is the Alantes Fox fight. He's another freakishly tall guy who Liam Williams stopped. I'm just not ready to stop believing in Liam Williams. So I'm going for the machine for the upset to stop Frank Warren's blue chip prospect. There's my bold call for the night.
I like it.
What do you think? Like, am I talking nonsense?
No. I'm not sure about Shiraz at all. I'm not sure about him yet at all. I just don't know where Liam Williams is. That's the thing that's kind of making me a little bit hesitant to make a pick for Williams. But, you know, Williams has shown that he's a puncher at this level, that he's spiteful at this level. And I'm not sure Shiraz is much above domestic level. I know he's got a WBC trinket, but, you know, I don't think that means much. Yeah, I could see it. I think Shiraz might get a decision. I think he might win a decision. That's going to be my pick. But I'd be happy for Williams if he won. So we'll see. We shall see. And also, which is very strange, I only realised this earlier on, tomorrow night in America, for you dodgy Fire Stick guys, it's Teofimo Lopez and Jermaine Ortiz. Jermaine Ortiz, who boxed, he boxed Lomachenko, didn't he? That's an interesting little fight, isn't it?
It is, and it's one that Teofimo Lopez should look good in. But after the George Kambosos debacle, I don't know if I can ever trust Teofimo Lopez in a fight against a guy that he thinks is beneath him. In these big fights against Josh Taylor and Lomachenko, he can step up and bring his A game. With the Kambosos fight, I know there was a lot of factors. He wanted more money, went to purse bids, Thriller won it, then landed on Matchroom card, etc., etc. There was a load of nonsense. He'd been out of the ring for a while. His head wasn't in a good place. But still, he was pretty comfortably beaten by George Kambosos, who is a solid, if unspectacular, guy. So I would like to think we see the pre-champion version, who was knocking out guys like Richard Comey for fun. But I just don't trust Teofimo Lopez. What do you think?
Yes, and I remember predicting that. I remember doing the big predictions for the year and saying I'm quite proud of it that Teofimo Lopez would lose a fight that year, and he did. He ended up losing to Kambosos. Because you're right, you just can't trust him. You can't trust him. His relationship with his dad, it just looks so fucking toxic, and that's his fucking trainer and his head guy, and it just looks so fucking... You see clips of them. There was a clip of kind of him doing an interview with some reporter, and then his dad walked in, and it just looked like his whole world had fell out of him. Like, yeah, so we'll see. I like Teofimo. I'm choosing to believe here that he's got his head screwed on, and he's going to look great like he did against Josh Taylor. Because I want that to be the case. But I'd be happy for Ortiz if he won as well. So we'll see. That's Thursday night of... it's very, very strange, but that's, I guess...
It's Super Bowl weekend.
It's Super Bowl weekend, is it? Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's shoulder programming to the Super Bowl with ESPN.
Oh, there we go. I don't know anything about NFL. Only thing I know about Super Bowl is that Usher's doing the halftime show. And that'll be good. But I've got no interest in NFL. Some people do, but I find it really fucking boring. Do you like it? Do you like the NFL?
No, I don't think I've ever watched a game in my life. I don't bet on it. I know nothing about it. I just know it's Super Bowl weekend because my timeline is full of people very excited about it.
Okay, because I find it very like stop-start, and then there's an advert. It's like stop-start. I've watched it like, I don't know, not much of it, maybe half an hour or something in my whole life. And they have it at Spurs Stadium, but I would never go to the Spurs Stadium to watch it, even for free. No thank you. Yeah, it just doesn't do anything for me, the NFL or any of that sort of thing. But, you know, you like what you like. And I think Usher will do a good job at the halftime show. And that's about all that matters, really, with the NFL and all that sort of thing. It just doesn't do it. I don't know. It just doesn't. Do you know what I also find a bit weird? We're at the end of the pod, so let's talk about random shit. At the end of the...
Let's go for it.
I find it weird when people in the UK really attach themselves to an American sports team. Like, there's people I know that... Yeah. I know someone, he's a lovely guy, but he's into the Bears. Although, to be fair, he's not super passionate about it, so that's probably not a good example. But actually, there's not him. There's someone else I know that's really into the Packers. He's not American. He's born in fucking Middlesex. Like, he's not from Green Bay or wherever the Packers are. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Am I harsh?
No, it's rugby with shoulder pads and headgear. It's like they took one of our sports and made it worse. Like, I don't understand why you'd be into it. Like, go watch rugby. It's the more violent version. They're not having to wear flipping shoulder pads and helmets.
I made reference to rugby on a Spurs pod, on the Fighting Cock, on the Spurs pod the other day. But then Flav said, yeah, but don't rugby fans hold each other's dick at the pub? Because rugby...
Yeah,
they're a bit
do.
Weird, aren't they? Rugby fans are a bit weird. They're like getting naked in front of each other and all of that sort of thing. They're all a bit weird.
Yeah, good point.
Another thing, but while we're being old men and moaning... There's one more thing, but it's sports related. Formula One. I like Lewis Hamilton. Pretty cool that he's gone to Ferrari. But I don't understand why people support teams. Unless you're Italian and you're into Ferrari. But I don't understand why a guy from Sussex would be into Red Bull and wear a Red Bull jacket. That's fucking weird. Or cycling. And my heart, is that harsh?
No, I do find it weird. Like, supporting a car manufacturer, it's just bizarre. Like, no, it's not for me.
Yeah, and it's like when they'll talk about Red Bull and it'll be like, we. What do you mean, we? It's a fucking drink, you freak. I don't know. That'll do. Anyway, John, I'm going to leave you to your evening.
No worries, Cal. Thank you very much for having me on, as always.
Alrighty, take care.
Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.